But first, off to the old dart for our fortnightly date with Dunt. Ian Dunt is, of course, our regular commentator on the UK political scene and a columnist for iNews. Ian, we've talked about the Rwanda bill for what seems, well, like years. Has it reached the end game? What's the latest?
Yeah, it's passed, basically. I mean, it will get royal assent in the next 3 days, but last night, over a really epic series of battles between the Commons and the Lords, the last stages were finally reached and the bill passed. It's a depressing morning. It's a really grim, grim morning in any number of ways, constitutional, moral, political. It's not even just about the brutality of the measures on refugees in the UK who would have arrived here thinking this was the kind of place that they could get safe haven before being forcibly removed to an African dictatorship. It's also about the constitutional damage that we're doing to the country in the process. Because, of course, this followed from the Supreme Court in Britain saying Rwanda was not a safe country to send refugees. What this bill does is essentially say that Parliament can overrule the courts, that whatever Parliament says is true becomes true by virtue of it saying it. They could just as easily say that black is white and that dogs can fly. It is essentially the giving up on any kind of normal constitutional function for the judiciary, a really profoundly dangerous moment for British liberal democracy. That bill is now absolutely going to get royal assent because it passed through the Commons and the Lords.
Now, Sunak says no ifs, no buts, but there are plenty of critics and opponents to the plan to offshore, spawn boat arrivals in Rwanda, some even from within the Tory party.
Yeah, there's plenty of Tory discontent. You know, where the trouble is that it's not in the House of Commons. And the origin of all this is the Brexit fight. There was a point in the middle of the Brexit wars where Tory moderates stood up and went, look, we're not going to accept no deal Brexit. We're not going to accept the most extreme example. And Boris Johnson, who was then the Prime Minister, purged them from the party. He essentially purged the moderate wing of conservatism, we call it One Nation conservatism, from the parliamentary party. And since that happened, there has not been any real resistance from the more decent element of conservatism within parliament. So all of the opposition that comes from conservatives is in the House of Lords. You take someone like Ken Clark. Ken Clark, he was the Chancellor when I was growing up, proper old kind of Thatcherite fiscal conservative. But he believes in old-fashioned conservative ideas like the rule of law and the idea that you shouldn't have the government just come and dictate what courts are and are not allowed to find in their cases. So on that basis, he opposes it. And there are others like him. But, you know, that is ultimately a minority voice. When you look at the people who claim to be on the sort of centre-right of politics within Parliament, they barely raised a squeak of opposition. Only two Tory MPs, just two of them, honourable though they might be, but only two of them were able to resist their party when it came to this bill in the Commons.
On a related matter, what about the Afghanis who helped the Brits in the fight against the Taliban? Are they exempt?
No, what a pertinent question that is. There was an effort by Lord Brown to have them exempt, to basically say anyone that was connected to ARAP, which is a particular kind of scheme for those who were formerly helping Brits, in other words, they were employed by African army to help Brits, that they should be exempt. The government said that it accepted that amendment after weeks of fighting it, but refused to do so in the bill itself. It just said, look, we promise that we won't do it. Now, I don't want to be paranoid, but I have to say that this government's promises are not worth the paper that they're written on, and they haven't even bothered to put it on paper. You know, this is a government that is establishing a bill which is based at its heart on lies. I mean, the purpose of the bill is to say Rwanda is safe, but we refuse to do any of the things that would make it safe. It is fundamentally a deceptive bill. So when a government of that nature comes along and goes, oh, sure, you know, believe our promises, but we're not going to put it down in the primary legislation, you think, no, absolutely not. You are demonstrably deceptive human beings. But even if that were to be true, It ignores the vast majority of people that helped Britain in Afghanistan, because most people that helped were not employed by the Afghan army. They were employed in a variety of different areas. For instance, you know, in the judiciary, female judges, human rights campaigners, teachers, journalists. These were the kind of figures who helped. Now, when Britain evacuated from Afghanistan, those people were almost completely ignored. They were given very, very little help. They were left at the mercy of the Taliban, despite all of Britain's promises about democracy and liberalism that we would bring to the country. Now, they're not even included in what is being discussed here. So in actual fact, those people who helped this country, if they managed to escape the Taliban and make it to Britain, will now be sent packing to Rwanda, unless they happen to have been employed by the Afghan army, and even then on the basis of assurances, which we should be frankly very sceptical about indeed.
Now, under this plan, if that's the word to describe it, how many are expected to be relocated to Rwanda? I understand there have been some, 6,000 small boat arrivals this year alone, Ian.
Yeah, and to give you an impression, I mean, look, we have 83,000 people on the asylum waiting list. These are basically people whose claims are just simply not being processed. You know, not being processed because the idea is that we'll send all of these people to Rwanda. So what's the point of even finding out whether they are asylum seekers or not? Just keep them in this kind of Kafkaesque, bureaucratic half-life where they're not entitled to any, you know, to go to work or to any real income, waiting for their claim. Rwanda's capacity is about 400 asylum claims a year. I mean, the plan itself is so obviously insane, so obviously muddled and ineffective, that it's extraordinary that it can just pursue its way through Parliament without even the press really pointing out just how manifest its own inadequacy is. So we don't think they have the capacity for it. We're not certain that the government can charter the planes, although they think that they've chartered enough flights. They're currently in the business of just some of the most obscene moral squalor of training officials to be able to manhandle refugees onto those planes in order to get them to Rwanda. So really, there are a lot of structural problems and incentive problems as to whether they'd be able to deliver this.
Older listeners may recall a time when Australia was trying to cut a deal with Cambodia, of all bloody places, you know, to send some refugees there. It was grotesque, ludicrous, and immoral, and here you mob are echoing us yet again.
Doing the exact same thing. You and I have spoken about this many times before, but there is an obscene kind of conveyor belt between Australian anti-immigrant and anti-refugee policy and the take-up in Britain. It is, and I'm sorry to say this, this will not please you, but you know, you can point to a country like Sweden, for instance, in British debate, and generally what Sweden represents is, you know, generous welfare policy. So you'll always say, if you're trying to make that case, you'd be like, well, more like Sweden. And when it comes to Australia, the primary totem, the primary symbol is draconian refugee policy. And this has been transmitted into Britain by, you know, also a variety of Australian figures like Linton Crosby. You know, you could actually say it in a slightly more nuanced way by people like Rupert Murdoch. You know, that aspect of Australian politics just comes funneled into Britain and has done for several decades now, since at least John Howard, that attitude has sort of been adopted. Britain's done exactly the same, by the way. Rwanda's just the only country that took the offer. We were going around cap in hand, desperately trying to get other countries to do it. Costa Rica seemed notably outraged and offended that we should go there and talk about their country as somewhere just to dump problems that we've decided we ourselves cannot
be bothered to face. I didn't realise that they went shopping.
Oh, they went shopping and just got no customers. You know, the only place they could find was Rwanda, a dictatorship, somewhere that we know is unsafe, and we can demonstrate as unsafe by the fact that we grant asylum to Rwandans when they get to the UK. You know, there are successful Rwandan asylum cases all the time in this country. So again, you sometimes feel like you're going completely insane. The evidence for the fact that Rwanda is not safe is so obvious, so palpable, so black and white, that you have to have an insane political culture to have passed a bill that insists that it is safe.
Ian, explain to this ancient broadcaster why Rishi has invested so much in this policy. What's the risk and what on earth is the reward?
That's a just a, a horrible story, really. But it starts with Boris Johnson. You know, this was originally Boris Johnson's plan. It was kept up by Liz Truss in her blink and you'll miss it administration, and is then pursued by Sunak. And it was never meant to work. It was meant as one of Boris Johnson's culture war wedges. You know, he knows that, you know, liberals in the city, university educated, generally think you should be nice to immigrants and asylum seekers, will hate it. And his target demographic, which is probably about 25% of the country, who are basically just very passionately and aggressively anti-immigration and anti-asylum, will love it because it sounded tough and brutal and like a kind of moral collapse that apparently some people feel the need to associate themselves with. So he pursued it for that reason. Now, at that point, Rishi Sunak knew it wouldn't work. He was the Chancellor in the Treasury at the time, and he said, well, this is just completely insane. This is just a terrible use of money, which it is. We've spent hundreds of millions of pounds on this thing so far in order to deport zero asylum seekers. Now, Rishi Sunak becomes leader. He thinks, well, I have to appeal to the right of my party. I have to have something I can say to the country as to how I'm going to stop the boats. So on that basis, this policy became what he follows. So he now has strapped himself to this policy completely. There's even an extent to which the election timeline is dependent on when he thinks he can get at least one flight into the air. He thinks, if I can get one flight into the air, it'll show to the country that, you know, I'm trying to do something about the small boats problem. In actual fact, what he's done, and this is the tiny bit of reassurance you can get from the absolute disaster that we're watching right now, is strap his own political credibility and his electoral chances to a plan which will not work, which was never designed to work, and which he himself knows cannot work.
Ian, so on that basis, without the intervention and security of the Lords, what would the Rwanda bill have looked like?
Very similar. The Lords accomplished almost nothing in the end because the government just won't budge. I'm a big supporter of the Lords, and they tried the hardest that they could to make changes here, but they just don't have any moderate conservatives in the Commons to help them. And on that basis, it was very hard for them to continue the fight. So apart from that verbal assurance when it came to Afghans who directly worked for the army, we really have very little. It's basically gotten through in its pure and very, very grim form.
Any further hurdles, obstacles, legal challenges?
Just practical matters. Can they get the planes? Can they get the cases? There are legal challenges that are still just about possible under the bill, but they have been narrowed to the point of being certainly extremely unlikely. It's about each individual having to show why that in their specific case, perhaps due to health, perhaps due to mental health, they would be unable to be sent to Rwanda. We would expect most lawyers to use mental health in that capacity. I mean, they will launch those initiatives. But really, the bill has been very carefully written to exclude legal challenge and certainly to remove the European Convention of Human Rights, which Sunak now describes as a foreign court, from the process. So I think it's hard for us to stop it. I think probably he will succeed in what he says he's going to do, which is by July to get planes taking refugees to Rwanda.
Now, Labour comes to power at the next election. This is a very likely outcome. What happens then?
They will repeal. They have said this very, very clearly now and on multiple occasions. They will repeal. They didn't fight this thing to the end because they think that you can't really fight things in the House of Lords if it's got a majority in the Commons. I think that's completely wrong. I mean, it's constitutionally illiterate. But nevertheless, they didn't fight it to the end. However, they will repeal. And their policy is primarily about putting money and resources and staff into the asylum processing system and then working internationally to try and stop the boat. So it's a much more sane and responsible approach than the one that we're seeing from the government.
Would you do me a favour, please, and get me an autographed copy of Liz Truss's new book?
Absolutely not, because then I'd have to buy it and pay her money, and I absolutely refuse to do that. There are many things I would do for you, Philip, but pay money to Liz Truss is absolutely not one of them. Her book was released this week. I don't know if you've seen some of the coverage of it. It is quite shocking. I mean, there are moments she's desperately trying to court the American Republican sort of deranged right-wing lunatic market. And so it's appearing on Fox News. And even then, she's unable to satisfy even really rudimentary human behavior. There's one point where she gets her moment to promote the book, picks it up and shows them the back cover, turns it over, then shows them the front cover the wrong way around, turns it around, finally gets it right. And you think, wow, that's an extraordinary thing. All you were asked to do at that moment was to pick up and show people a book. book, and you still manage to make two really quite severe errors in that 1 second period, which in its way is indicative for both the contents of the book and the manner in which you conducted yourself when in office.
Lovely to chat, and we'll have to leave it there. See you in a fortnight. Our regular commentator on UK politics, Ian Dunt, columnist for iNews.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.